Whatever the adventure, there's a BMW engineered to take it on. The X3 delivers a striking design with agile performance. The 100% electric i4 packed with pure electric energy. Or the plug-in hybrid X5, an impressive, versatile SUV granting full control on every journey. Choose what powers your next adventure during the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine.
Hurry in for exceptional offers through December 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Bruins are 2-0 under Joe Sacco. Not the prettiest of wins necessarily, but clearly the defense is shoring up a little bit. Offense is still a little bit dry, but just, you know, initial impressions through two games. And I guess we can go right into the opening shift. So, Bridget, why don't we throw it to you?
Yeah, so I mean, my opening shift is that they found a way to win since Jim Montgomery got fired. Now, though he wasn't out of a job long, which we will get to. They win the first two games under Joe Sacco. But like you mentioned, they did not have a lot of offensive output. They had a goal in the first game, two goals in the second game. They win 2-1 over Detroit. But at the very least, I feel like the effort has gone up, and we've seen energy and maybe confidence to go up, but there are still certain players that are still plenty of players that are not where they have been in the past. So we'll get into that in Brian's shift. But basically my opening shift is when we talked last, we looked ahead to the schedule and like what games should they be able to take in this 5-game stretch. And Utah had been struggling. They were able to win against Utah, albeit it was a 1-0 game. They beat Detroit, and now ahead of them, they have Vancouver at home on Tuesday, and then they have the Islanders on the road the next day, and then the Penguins back at home on Friday. So there are still winnable games coming up. Could they start the stretch with Sacco on a longer win streak? Like, could this end up being a 5-game win streak for them? They haven't strung together wins pretty much at all this season. So their offense for sure is going to have to start getting going, because you're not going to win every game if you only can score one or two goals. A lot of times your goaltending and your defense aren't going to be good enough to stop that. But luckily for the Bruins, their defensive play the last two games under Sacco has been better.
Yeah, their defensive play has been better. Their special teams has been better, which is important. But unfortunately for the Bruins, and I'm glad to see that their defense is getting better and that they've gotten two wins here. But if we're going to take off the Joe Sacco, new head coach bump blinders that, I think Bruins fans and, ourselves included, like we want the team to bounce back. We want them to get back to what they should be. But if their offense doesn't improve, then it's not going to happen. And I'm starting to wonder, I've been wondering, I think we all have been, do they have the personnel for the offense to be better? Now, over the last 17 games, Bridget and Scott, the Bruins are averaging 1.82 goals per game. That's quite the sample size, 17 games. That dates back to October 19th, their first meeting against Utah. And then, even at the top of this, the leading scorers, David Pastrnak right now, he's on pace for a 30-goal season. 30 goals, 41 assists, 71-point season. That's a 40-point drop-off from his last couple of years, give or take. Now, that's your leading score, right? So it's tough to really come down hard on your leading score when he is just that, your leading score. But for his standards, he's very much off pace for what he's capable of. But you go further down the lineup and, Elias Lindholm, by most accounts, none of us have been saying has had a great offensive year. He's third on the team in scoring with 10 points. Justin Brazeau, who should be a, middle six guy, third line guy. He's fourth in the team in scoring with 9 points. I said this to you guys before we started recording, but Charlie Coyle and Nikita Zadorov each have 22 games played, and they each have 5 points on the year. Pavel Zaka, 7 points. So I don't know. Joe Sacco made comments that it starts with defense and then the offense will come. I guess let's see how that plays out. But I'm glad they've gotten the 2 wins. Bridget, hopefully they can pull a win streak together here. But the offense has to wake up, and it has to wake up fast.
Yeah, lot to get into there. My opening shift is about the other big news from the weekend that Bridget touched on, which is that Jim Montgomery already has another job. The St. Louis Blues announced on Sunday morning that they had fired Drew Bannister and signed Montgomery to a 5-year contract to take over as their head coach. It is the shortest turnaround from firing to new job in season in NHL history. Only 5 days later, he was hired after being fired. So, you know, good for him. And this was the one that always made the most sense. I think I even mentioned it our last podcast. Like, he broke into the NHL in St. Louis. He met his wife there. They still have a home there. They still spend the off seasons there. He was an assistant coach there for 2 seasons, 2020 to 22. And, you know, before he got hired by the Bruins, and he drew rave reviews. Doug Armstrong, their GM, loved him. Their young players, now in their prime players, like Robert Thomas and Jordan Kyrou, had a ton of good things to say about him. And now, like, in retrospect, if you look at last spring, the Blues season ended April 17th, and Drew Bannister had been an interim head coach through the rest of that season. They didn't sign him to an extension and make him the full-time head coach until May 7th, which was 3 days after the Bruins knocked off Toronto in the first round. And it seems pretty clear in retrospect that they were waiting to see if Montgomery was going to get fired then. I think he was the guy they wanted all along. They knew once the Bruins advanced, he wasn't going to get fired. So then they went to Bannister. But Doug Armstrong said it on Sunday in his press conference. He said this move was not about Drew Bannister. It was about Jim Montgomery. He wanted Montgomery. Montgomery became available. He went and got him. So, you know, now you have something to track. Obviously, you know, what Bruce Cassidy did in Vegas was a huge story, winning the Cup his first year. I don't think Montgomery's going to do that, because I don't think that Blues team is good enough to be anywhere near that. But it is going to be interesting to see how Montgomery now does in his next job, which, you know, begins right away.
And if we want to talk about how things kind of went down between Montgomery and the Bruins, Elliot Friedman on the most recent 32 Thoughts podcast talked about how Boston offered Montgomery a 3-year contract, not a 5, but that ultimately it came down to a difference in approach, which seems to me to be like on ice approach, not anything contractual. So that kind of leads us into, you know, kind of a blend of your opening shift, Scott, and mine, which is just like, is this team built to, you know, Montgomery's an offensive mind. Clearly, the Bruins have been struggling offensively, but did Montgomery see something with this the construction of this roster where it wasn't conducive for his style of coaching, which is puck possession, quality over quantity? I think all coaches want to play fast in the NHL these days, so I don't know if that's a, you know, unique aspiration for a coach these days, but it just clearly seems like, and if that's the case, like, is that, how does that make you guys feel that the Bruins own head coach maybe didn't believe in the roster construction? What does that say about the team and the disconnect between front office and coaching staff?
Well, I don't know if it says anything really about the approach from management or what the roster looks like. I think it's exactly what you said. I think it's just a difference in approach and style. Like Montgomery, you know, we've talked about it plenty, like, quality over quantity in terms of shots. He doesn't care about just throwing pucks on net. He wants to work for you know, real high quality, high danger chances. In his first season here, obviously he had a team that was very much capable of doing that. The 22-23 team had a lot of offensive talent, made plays off the rush, generated high danger chances that way, you know, cross slot passes, all of that, you know, some east-west flair in their game. And now in the two seasons since, Don Sweeney has adapted and tried to build a team that is designed to play more north-south, forecheck, funnel pucks to the net, get big bodies there, and try to score that way. It's a different style. This is a very different team than 22-23. And I think Montgomery would, you know, when he would talk about how they want to play, he would say all of that, and it would sound like he was on the same page with Sweeney, or that he at least recognized, you know, how he had to coach them. But now, you know, when you start to hear some of the stuff like this, when you hear, you know, maybe Montgomery wasn't completely sold on being around long term, and you get that Friedman report, like, maybe he was saying it but didn't truly believe it or feel it, or was kind of, you know, maybe there's part of him sitting there saying, like, yeah, I guess this is how we have to play, but man, it's not really how I want to play.
Yeah, and very obviously there was a disconnect because the team just hasn't clicked. And you want to know what? I don't think that they've been even that when Monty was here, I don't think they were even getting those high quantity shots. Like, they weren't doing either, really.
Quality?
No, they weren't doing high quantity either. I'm saying, like, they
weren't. Right. I mean, he didn't really want to do that.
So, like, they weren't going for either, right? Because the quality stuff they couldn't create, and they weren't prioritizing the quantity, and they weren't taking a lot of point shots that were getting through and creating stuff that way. So, and also obviously personnel very different from 2 years ago when they had Bergeron, who could facilitate, you know, down low passing really well through the bumper and through the slot, and Krejci, obviously Hall, like this was a different team that did have the ability to move pucks and go east west and give you higher quality stuff. But like you said, Brian, roster may just not be built like that anymore, because Charlie Coyle has struggled doing stuff like that. Pavel Zacha at times has. Sometimes he's great with Pasta, but sometimes they've not been able to produce much this season. So I don't know about like Trent Frederick's more of like a straight line, go to the net, fight for pucks kind of guy than let's pass it around and see if we can find our like high danger chance this way. But anyway, guys, I think it's still clear that the disconnect was there between Montgomery and maybe Sweeney and the team not being able to take both visions and make something productive out of it. But when we talked about who's to blame for Coach getting fired, everybody kind of said, well, it wasn't really his fault first and foremost, like he's a good coach. And obviously when you're only unemployed for 5 days, there's plenty of other people out there that probably thought, wow, the Bruins made the wrong choice. We would like to add this guy to our organization. And so he goes right back to St. Louis and he gets picked up right away. So I don't think any of us are surprised by that. I think we all knew that, as with Bruce Cassidy, this is a good coach that's not going to go very long without a job.
Yeah. And as it pertains to, you know, a coach and the roster he's given, you know, styles make fights. And as Scott pointed out, he had a much different roster 2 years ago with Boston last year. But, you know, I thought last year he had a better coaching job than his first year, despite the fact that his first year as Bruins coach, they broke regular season records, but he had the roster that kind of made sense. Last year, they really overachieved. And when you overachieve, that's indicative of great coaching, in my opinion, in addition to, you know, players outperforming their norms in some circumstances. But that's why this year kind of caught us off guard, because, you know, if he had a great roster in 22-23 and that explains his success, okay. But, you know, he didn't have that same roster in 23-24. And they had they overachieved, and so I'm surprised that now the roster, which isn't much different than last year, all of a sudden was a mystery for him to. I don't know, something's not adding up. But at the end of the day, the fit just wasn't there anymore. And one thing that's significantly improved in the very brief two game sample has been Boston's special teams. So, you know, I talked about off the top how if their offense can't get it going, then they're going to have a tough time winning hockey games. That's true. But at the same time, it's a special teams league, and their special teams has improved. Over the last two games, their penalty kill is 8-for-8, and that includes the game against Detroit. And Detroit, I believe, has one of the top power plays in the league. Forgive me for not knowing their exact ranking, but it's up there. And on the power play, Boston has gone.
I know they were fifth going into the game. I don't know where they are coming out, but
a formidable power play unit, and they go 0-for-4 against Boston. Utah again. Utah has some skill, and Boston goes 4-for-4 against them on the PK too. Power play, Boston's 2-for-9 in their last two games. A power play goal in each of the last two games. I think that's like 22%. So. And when Boston, I think Boston was scoring at like 15% on the year. So again, it's a very small sample, but you know, the special teams was struggling with Jim Montgomery as the head coach, despite his assistants having much to do with those as well. But under Joe Sacco's jurisdiction, in two games, the special teams has improved. So that's something to continue to watch as well.
Yeah. As far as the, you know, last year overachieving, like one thing I would point out here is the structure was already starting to not totally fall apart, but it was
bending,
not nearly as good as it was the year before. You know, like I know we covered it at the time, but they gave up a lot of high danger chances last year and they didn't create a lot. Now what's changed is last year they still had elite goaltending and they finished at a high rate. So I just pulled it up just to compare. So last year they finished the season third in the NHL in team save percentage and eighth in team shooting percentage. Those are good spots to be. You're finishing a lot of chances and you're stopping a lot of chances. This year so far, they are 22nd in team save percentage and 29th in team shooting percentage. So, like, that's a little oversimplifying. I don't want to make this all just about percentages and numbers, but, like, those are huge changes. Your goaltending has been much worse than last year, and your finishing has been way worse than last year. So, like, the structure and, like, the chances that they're giving up and getting aren't, like, a whole lot different. Like, that they were already starting to struggle both to create high danger chances and to prevent them last year. In fact, they've actually been better this year at preventing high danger chances, at least at 5-on-5. So, you know, like if those two things were different, if they were finishing more, if they even had a league average shooting percentage and a league average save percentage, like we'd probably be talking about like maybe 2, 3, maybe 4 more wins. Like, it would be a noticeable difference, and I think we'd all feel a little better about this team, but they haven't gotten that. Their finishing has been awful, and their goaltending until these last two games has been pretty bad.
Well, Scott, let's oversimplify it a step further. Dating back to January 1st of this year, so almost a full calendar year at this point, Boston's a 500 hockey team in the regular season. So that includes the second half of last year where they had those favorable numbers that you're speaking of, high conversion rates and, you know, extraordinary goaltending and high danger chances. So even when those stats were in their favor, they were a 500 team, right? So, yeah, I mean, I guess, you know, that is true. Like the sample size under Montgomery goes further than just this season. They've been a 500 hockey team for their last, I don't know what, 40, 50 games regular season.